Okay, good morning. I think we'll start, and we'll just shift the order of things on our agenda this morning. This is a regular meeting of the Board of Directors of the Bay Area Air Quality Management District. May we have roll call?
On the roll for the Board of Directors regular meeting of October 17th, 2012, Director Avalos?
Present.
Director Bates? Director Garner? Director Gorin? Director Groom?
Present.
Director Haggerty? Director Hosterman?
Here.
Director Hudson?
Here.
Director Calra?
Here.
Director Klatt?
Here.
Director Niss? Director Lee? Director Marr? Director Miley? Director Pifo? Director Rice?
Here.
Director Ross?
Here.
Director Sparing? Director Wagon Connect?
Here.
Director Yeager? Director Zane? And Chair Joya?
Here.
We have not yet established a quorum.
Okay. First, we will start with our Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item on our agenda is public comment on non-agenda matters, which is a chance for the public to speak on items that we're not considering today. So I don't have any speaker cards on this. Sean, are there? Does anyone wish to speak under public comment on non-agenda items? Okay, hearing none, we are going to skip over the consent calendar, which are action items, because we don't yet have a quorum. And then we will wish the Giants good luck this afternoon, right? And hope for a Giants-Tigers World Series. Is that what we're going to do?
Would be good.
Does that make sense? All right.
You can wait. You can go for the Yankees if you want.
Does it look too good for the Yankees? No, sure doesn't. So we do have some action items on the committee reports. So what we will do is move straight to our item 7 presentation, which is the overview of the 2012-2013 Wood Smoke Reduction Program. We have our Deputy Officer, Gene Rogenkamp.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Chair Joya and members of the board. So I'll give a brief overview of our upcoming Winter Spare the Air program. So as you recall, wood smoke is the largest source of particulate matter here in the Bay Area during the winter. And we have extensive health effects in this region from breathing fine PM, or PM 2.5, very, very tiny particles that go deep in our lungs and cause a variety of different kinds of health effects that are listed here on this chart, from aggravating asthma and bronchitis to contributing to cardiovascular problems and even premature death. So we have here on this chart, as we incrementally reduce exposure to fine PM in the region, we have less and less of these different kinds of health effects. We reduce the suffering that goes along with that, and also the health care costs that go with treating those illnesses. So to address this problem in this region, this board adopted the Wood Smoke Rule in 2008, and has a variety of different aspects to the rule, as you're aware. Prohibiting burning solid fuels in fireplaces, wood stoves, fire pits outdoors when we forecast that we'll have an exceedance of the standard. And this is from the beginning of November through the end of February each year. In addition, all year round, fireplaces and wood stoves cannot have excessive smoke. You're not allowed to burn garbage. Only cleaner burning devices can be sold in the region and installed in new construction and remodeling. All solid fuel must be seasoned wood, and it must be labeled so that people know how to check before they begin burning. So we've had this rule in place for a number of years, for 4 years, and here's some statistics about the number of winter spare the air alerts that we've called, the number of days when we have had exceedances of the federal PM 2.5 standard, the number of complaints, and some other information per season. And I think the thing I want to point out most significantly here on this slide is that the number of exceedances that we have can vary significantly from year to year, and the number of winter spare the air alerts. And that's because the meteorological conditions can really affect the buildup of particulate matter in the wintertime. So you'll see that 2010-2011, we only had four winter spare the alerts and one exceedance of the standard. That winter was very wet and windy and prevented the buildup of PM. But the other years, we had very dry, still, calm winter evenings, and that can lead to the buildup of particulate matter, especially from wood smoke. So each year, we think about how can we improve this program for next season? And this year, we have a number of changes to the program that we're implementing. The first is more conservative forecasting. So our staff look at data and models and decide, okay, what does it look like for the next 24 hours? And if we can see that there could be an exceedance of the standard, a winter spare the air alert is called. But as you can see, we still have exceedances of the standard from time to time, and we want to limit that as much as possible. So we're making more conservative forecasting to reduce the likelihood that we'll have those exceedances. And we do think that this can contribute to calling more winter spare the alerts during the season. Another change that we're going to be implementing is to have a wood smoke awareness school or course that first-time violators would take. And this is instead of the warning letter. They could learn about the rule, the health effects of wood smoke and PM. It's very simple. It takes them about less than 20 minutes. I did it myself. Actually, for me, it was less than that. But somebody who may not know the rule as well, less than 20 minutes. It's online, or they can do it on paper. And they need to do that within 30 days of being notified that they violated the rule. And if they decide they don't want to take that course, they can pay a $100 penalty. Other districts who have these programs in place for years, these wood smoke schools, find that over 90% of their first-time violators take the course. So they feel that that's been very useful in educating the public about the rule and the health effects of wood smoke.
Like traffic school light.
Exactly. So, of course, we will continue our enforcement program, responding to complaints, patrolling, looking at the times when people tend to burn, to identify when burning is happening and notify people about the requirements of the rule. So those are the main changes that we're making this year to the program. We've also been stepping up our partnerships with local governments because we do need to address this localized problem of pockets in the region due to meteorological and geographic, topographic deviation within the region. So we've been working with local governments, and I just want to point out two particular aspects of this effort. One is that we are working with Marin County on a change-out program, specifically in the San Geronimo Valley. This is an area that does not have natural gas service. There is wood burning that goes. It's a valley where there can be pretty intense buildup of wood smoke in the wintertime and actually even other times of the year. So Marin County is implementing a wood smoke change-out program with a $750 incentive for folks to change out their older stoves and fireplaces and install cleaner burning equipment, EPA certified equipment. So the kickoff for that event was October 4th. The Air District is helping with that and contributing some money. And we're very hopeful that this pilot project will be successful and can lead to more and better. The other thing we've been doing is reaching out to cities and counties with an updated model wood smoke ordinance for those areas in particular that want to take this on and have problems with localized wood smoke aggravating residents. We have a new updated model, and indeed through the initiative of Director Colwell, we've worked with San Jose, and they are moving forward with developing a local ordinance, and we're hopeful that others will follow their lead.
Yay.
So the model ordinance has been part of our outreach with cities and counties. We're also continuing our media outreach. We'll be sitting down with the newspapers, the editorial folks at the newspapers, and reminding them that the wood smoke season is coming, helping them understand the rule and the health effects and why it's so important to have people not burn when we can expect high PM levels. We want them to cover the program during the season. We'll continue with our social media presence through Facebook and Twitter and Google Plus and Pinterest, and make sure that we have good dialogue during the season and especially on winter spare the air alerts. And we also find throughout our programs here at the Air District, but especially on these kinds of programs that touch residents very closely, that one-on-one interface works well to get people to understand the health effects of wood smoke and what they can do to help relieve the problems. So we'll be doing door-to-door outreach in a number of areas throughout the region.
So that's a walking team?
A walking team. They go door-to-door and talk to people. We have people at events, too, throughout the region. But in the wintertime, door-to-door really seems to help in key neighborhoods where we have a lot of burning. We will continue with our various kinds of advertising, so people get the message through a different forms of venues, from our bike guy who goes around in communities to theaters and fitness centers and bus shelters, so a variety of different types of messaging throughout the region. And of course, it's really very important that people know how to find out when we call a Spare the Air alert, so they can know whether they can burn or not burn. And these are the range of ways that people can find out: by calling our 1-877-40-BURN line. They can get the information from our websites. They can sign up for email alerts or phone alerts. We have an iPhone application. We have our Twitter, Facebook, et cetera. So we have a lot of folks following what's going on, looking to find out whether it's an okay day to burn or not. And we're hopeful that we'll have a very successful season. So that concludes my remarks. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay, so questions. Jean, one of the things you know we spoke about before, and I know an area I'm concerned about a little bit, is this issue of the fine on the first violation. There are some communities, especially communities that predominantly speak a second language, where they may not know that there's a no-burn rule in effect for that day. Mm-hmm. And previously, we issued warnings. Now, the first violation is either this wood smoke awareness class or $100 penalty.
Right.
So talk about sort of the thinking behind that a bit more and how you would anticipate addressing the concern, especially of lower-income communities of color, where the same, you know, folks may not always, you know, get the notice. They may not be on the computer and see it.
Right.
And a lot of it is really dependent on the media informing the public, and frankly, a lot of folks may not have the radio or TV on to hear it.
Right. So it's a very good question. We do a lot of outreach in multiple languages to try to get people the word about when we have a Spare the Air alert and when not. And our phone line in particular responds to many folks in various languages. The 1-877-40-BURN line got over 260,000 calls last mm-hmm. year, and many of those are in various languages. So that's one thing that we try to do to make sure that we have information available to people who are not first English speakers. And our advertising is also in multiple languages. So we do try to get out there with TV media and other and print media as well. The Wood Smoke School is an attempt to have people have an option for not paying the fine.
What's the cost of the Wood Smoke School?
It doesn't cost anything. And you would get notified that you were observed violating the rule and get information packet about how you can take the class
online or on paper. And how does the class work? Where would you do it? What's the...
Right. So we would mail it to you, and we might end up needing to mail it in various languages, uh-huh. and that's certainly something. And or you can do it online. And, you know, we're going to be very hand-holding for people to do this, at least in the beginning.
Because so they can do this from the comfort of their home?
If they have a computer at home,
right.
Yes, indeed.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah,
and members of the board, I wanted to mention something to just augment Ms. Roggenkamp's remarks. This approach has been successful out in the San Joaquin Valley and the Sacramento region, and anywhere between 92 to 98% of the people opt for the school instead of paying the fine. So it's an outreach effort all by itself.
Right.
We plan to have the school in different languages as well, Mr. Chairman. So
I
think that that's actually a really good way to educate the public. And most people realize, once going through the school, they now have a good understanding of how to clue in as to when there's a no burn day.
Great.
You have at your places our outreach elements. These are in English, but we would also do them in other languages, just mm-hmm. to talk about, in hopefully simple terms, about what the rule requires. So.
And I assume, Brian, you've looked at this to ensure that if someone challenges a penalty based on the fact they didn't have. Notice that you've looked at this from a legal standpoint?
That That was the original reason why we had the warning letter in the first few years.
I'm sure the mic's on, you speak a little louder.
That was the original reason for the warning letter in the first few years, is that if you got the warning letter, you didn't really have a good argument, that you didn't have a way to know how to find this out. I think we've gotten to a point where we're a few years in, and we can make a pretty good argument that people should know about this. You know, in the first year or two, there's a decent argument that it was a new thing. People might not be thinking about it. I think we'll have to see how that plays out if we end up having to go to small claims court on some of these and see how the court reacts, and we'll adjust based on that.
So presumably when somebody gets their first violation, they're also then notified in the future by email when there's a no-burn day. Is that what you do? So when folks are in the database, they're notified by email?
They need to sign up. We're not going to send them notices if they don't sign up for it.
So you don't automatically sign them up if they get a violation.
But they would get information about the different ways to be notified, so that hopefully they.
Yeah, I just think we have to continue to monitor this issue and watch it and sort of get an ongoing report on this, so that we're. I mean, all these rules affect different communities in different ways, so we need to think about that. So I would expect when we get our updates on the implementation of this change that we sort of take a look at that.
Right. We can do that through the year if you'd like to the Public Outreach Committee.
And Mr. Chairman, at the end of the season, we typically will come back to you as part of a review of the season. This is how many people we found and this kind of thing. If you'd like to have us include how this explicit program is working for you, we can do that as part of your report out of probably through the Stationary Source Committee is how we would do it.
Okay. Supervisor Groom, who I know is in good spirits after Cal won two in a row.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Be in good spirits while you can.
We'll see about this week.
Gene, could you explain a little bit about the 76 exemptions?
Yes, I will actually ask Wayne Hino to talk about the exemptions, because they are enforcement, compliance and enforcement group. Is sort of
here comes our quorum. Right here, the two guys from Alameda.
So the rule does allow for some exemptions. For instance, if you don't have heat other than your wood stove, then you are exempt. I mean, we're not going to have people freeze. But we need to verify indeed that people are applying for exemption, are eligible for the exemption, and so there's a process that our enforcement team goes through.
Are there other exemptions besides no in-house heat?
I think that's the main exemption. Over the years, you can still cook.
Okay.
So
thank you.
That's exempt. I think we got
Councilman
it.
Ross.
If you want to add something.
I might want to add that there is a seasonal exemption if somebody's heater's broken.
Oh, okay.
I'm Barbara Kohler. Wayne asked me to speak. So if your heater's broken, you can claim a seasonal exemption, but it's only a one-time claim. You can't claim it every year. So the intent is to allow you to get your heater fixed and then move on to the next season.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor Ross.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gene, on the couple things. First, I'm glad that Stanford doesn't have the bonfire every year.
It's just this year, I think they're not doing it at Cal this year, right, Tom? Because of the early game. Because of the early game, right.
Of course, Cal would be smart enough not to put those kind of things in the air. I just want to make sure Stanford is.
What happens? They can't burn if it's a no-burn day, right?
Well, yeah. I just thought I'd throw that out there. But two things. In San Joaquin Valley, I'm sure that they must have experience with languages other than English. So I'm sure we could probably glean what their outreach may be and how they're handling that and what the pitfalls and problems have been there. The second is on the $400 fine. I see we're giving rebates in San Geronimo Valley in Marin. Have we considered, or I'd like us to consider, if somebody does get the $100 fine, or they opt for the $100 aspect of the first violation, or they get caught a second time, that if they put that money towards a changeout, would be amenable to, once we had proof that they did a changeout to a certifiable device, that maybe we would waive the fine in lieu of
I think it's a very good point, and we're looking at the mechanism for doing that and the procedures for incorporating that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So just, and the reason that they were offering the rebates in San Geronimo Valley is, I know specifically because of the intense issue there,
And the fact that the county has stepped forward and wants
right.
to have this program and,
right.
and work with us to implement it. Yes.
Sounds like that's what San Jose is going to be doing.
Yeah.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, that valley is somewhat unique because there's no natural
right.
gas. And I didn't know if
right.
Director Rice wants to
right.
talk
yeah.
about this
right.
because this is something
right.
we're doing very close.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought I'd push my
sure.
button. I'm sorry.
You want to just respond?
Yes, and actually I wanted to thank Gene and thank Barbara for all the work you've done on that San Geronimo program. And I think that it San Geronimo Valley is sort of ground zero for a couple issues in terms of the biggest barriers for compliance. And it's the education, it's the information piece, people just not being aware of how to burn clean or the not aware of the no burn nights. That's no longer an excuse, I don't think. But the continuing outreach education, I think, is important. Cost is the biggest barrier in,
yeah.
in San Geronimo Valley. Tends to be communities that it is a community of not no high end and or not high end, and it can cost $2,000 to $4,000 to change to
right.
change out your stove or
right.
convert. So it's not insignificant.
Right.
Really appreciate that the Air District stepped up to match the county pool to put into this rebate fund, but still it only gets, it only gets a person so far, and I had the same idea about possibly applying an initial fine towards a change out if someone actually does follow through, though I do think that the school is important too, because a lot of this is about how to burn cleanly, if you can really burn cleanly at all. It's a little bit like the clean coal thing. It is, that said, there's the community there and the culture there. People move there for that sort of back to the earth lifestyle, a lot of them. And anyway, so I appreciate what the Air District's done, and I hope we continue to work that way. And I think if this pilot works out in the valley, I think it should be considered for other places. I think the investment is well worth what we can get on the back end if people change out their stoves in terms of health in the immediate communities.
Great. Thanks. Supervisor Wagenknecht, followed by Councilman Hudson.
My question has partially been answered by the previous comments, but I just wanted to, what is the rationale and what would be the game plan for doing a local, further local ordinances?
So one of the issues that we have a region-wide rule that applies everywhere throughout the region, but we do have areas that are more plagued by wood smoke than others. And that's a bit hard to grapple with at the regional level. And so our effort is to try to work with local agencies where there are these particular problems locally to have an ordinance that's tailored to the particular situation in the city or the county. So we have updated the model ordinance. We had one years ago and promoted it throughout the region. Some cities and counties adopted it, others didn't. We followed that with the region-wide rule. But now we're sort of circling back to say, okay, where we need something a bit more intense locally, where there are local concerns,
so it
and
allows
local concerns,
us to tweak.
Tweak it.
To tweak the bigger rule. Yeah.
So we're gonna give that a go and see how it goes, and then
so are there options?
Back. Many options and more options than there were the last time around when we had the model ordinance.
And it sounds like in the San Geronimo case there's carrots also that we're talking about.
That in Marin County that's been part of their response, and we are supporting that. And so we gave the information to city managers and local planners. The board got, believe, the information back in April. But we're here and available to work with you and your staff if you're interested in pursuing something at the local level. We'd be glad to help with that.
And if I could just add, what it allows us is one more opportunity for messaging, for talking points. It allows the city or the county to be able to bolster what the Air District is doing. And the more people that are talking about this, the more the public is going to understand that this is a real rule, this is important, we need to pay attention to it, and it just keeps the dialogue going, which with the dialogue continuing, that is what is helping to change people's mind and making them recognize that wood smoke is a problem.
Great.
Yeah, I want to bring this report to our asthma coalition and have them do some discussion about it.
Okay. Councilman Hudson?
You see the effect I have on our board members here.
overwhelm them, they don't show up on my side. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to the first thing the chair was talking about, is the people that can't afford these fines, that don't have the means or the communication level to get this information. I think we're missing an opportunity here. These same people care as much about their health and their kids' health and their parents' health as the rest of us. What we're really trying to do is a disclosure issue here, mm-hmm. of how do we get the information out. There's been 5 years of the Spare the Air. I think there's an opportunity to work with some of the groups that come in here. You mentioned the Asthma Coalition, whereas if somebody gets to the point where a fine or a second fine, that one of these health community organizations can help them with even a second violation. Because they're not going to be as kind at the, you know, as your police. If you run a red light or a stop sign, they're not going to do, well, here's a warning, there's a warning. But the opportunity to get the information out is what we should be focusing on, so that they can see why they don't want this.
Yeah, I mean, the classic case would be, let's say there are parts of the Bay Area that have a pretty large Laotian community, mm-hmm. That don't use the traditional media that we would tend to get this information out. And so you could clearly have a family that violates it without knowing that they violated. So I think we just need to be thoughtful. And I appreciate that the class is free, they can do it from home, but I think we need to just think about how we do that. Right. Councilmember Calvera?
Thank you. And I think that several of you up here have hit really the main point, which is the education piece, even in approaching making this a priority in San Jose through our priority ordinance system that we have there, rolling it out and talking to some of the neighborhood groups. There's not a lack of knowledge, but once they understand the significance of wood-burning smoke, then they have that buy-in. And I think it's just a greater challenge to get out, especially in places, most places in the Bay Area with such multi-ethnic communities. And it takes effort. And I think it's our responsibility as well as elected officials. We have our fingers on the pulse of the other neighborhood groups and so on. So this just gives us another vehicle to do that. I really want to thank the staff, particularly Barbara Kohler, who came down to San Jose to help educate some of the council members on some of the issue and making sure that they understand why this is something that's important to do. While we all have 100 different things we could be working on, while this is something that's important for cities to pick up as well. And I just want to put another plug in for the outreach. I think the Air District does a really good job at the outreach. I was at an event over the weekend that Supervisor Cortese does, Day on the Bay, and there are a couple of very friendly Air District employees there that were giving out information and were very helpful. And that's part of the process, because there were thousands and thousands of people that were there at that event. And so I think that it takes a team effort, but the end goal is not to punish people, but to educate them as to the effects of the wood-burning smoke.
Okay. All right, I have one speaker card, and that's Susan Goldsboro from Families for Clean Air. And each speaker has 3 minutes. That's the only speaker card I have. Hi, Susan. Hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
We appreciate the efforts that the Air District has taken to date to deal with this wood smoke problem. And we wanted to bring up the issue that, thank you. This will be the third winter that Families for Clean Air and Sonoma Technology have conducted our own monitoring of the air quality in the San Geronimo Valley. And we are conducting that monitoring to show what different pockets, the hot pockets of wood smoke throughout the Bay Area, are actually like. And we would like to encourage the Air District to do similar monitoring, both of PM2.5 and black carbon. And I know in my discussions with Eric Stevenson, he's considering doing that for a couple of months this winter. We think it's important because San Geronimo Valley is not unique. There are other areas that are of the same topographical nature and have wood burning levels that are also seriously high. This is a neighborhood issue, and as Jack Broadbent brought up last year, is the most dangerous form of pollution in the Bay Area. So keeping that in mind, we would like to encourage you to support monitoring that is not dependent upon the wood smoke that's caught along the transportation corridors where most of the monitors are now. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Thanks for your leadership, too. All right. This was meant to be informational. We don't really need a motion on this. So we'll move back now that we have a quorum. A few folks have joined us to our consent calendar. I just want to point out, just to draw everybody's attention to item 4 on the consent calendar, you know, in light of all of the sort of issues about violations and our ability to understand all the various notice of violations that are out there, I asked Jack and Brian to put together a clear policy through a resolution that would inform us on a more frequent basis of all notice of violations and then settlements of notice of violations. So under this new policy, every notice of violation issued will get reported to us on a board meeting for the following month, and all settlements of over $10,000 will also get will be put on our agenda, so we at least have the description, and that's what this policy is about. So I think it's very important, very useful for all of us, and appreciate staff having put that together. So the consent calendar. Supervisor Haggerty, did you want to speak on the consent?
I just want to ask a question on item 5.
Okay, so we will get to that. All right.
That's in
consent. All right, so is there a motion that's not, I think we put committee reports separately. So
no,
consent would be items.
I'll move the consent calendar.
1 through 4 would be consent.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, and then I'll call you first on item 5.
Okay.
So motion a second on the consent, items 1 through 4. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Those items pass. Item 5, we'll get first the report of the Personnel Committee from our Chair, Supervisor Wagenknecht.
Yes, thank you. I delivered this originally. The committee met on July 23rd, and we did that, the discussion about the air pollution control deputy air pollution control officers, and we got direction from the board, and we have answered that at this point. I think we've talked about this for a number of months, we continue to be asking more and more of our deputies, and asking them to make tougher and tougher calls through the time. We periodically have made adjustments to different groups for different purposes. So this is not totally out of the blue. We have the committee. You've got the comparisons, and you can see where they stand. The adjustment. If they cashed out this adjustment, it would be $3,500 a year. If they cash it out, it is non-pensionable. Jack has had. Our director has had discussions with the EA, and not that they will agree on everything, but they have had this discussion. It's not a hidden thing, and so at this point, I would move the directors approve the report and the recommendation of the 5 days of leave for the deputy. Air pollution control officers.
And I'll second it.
The motion is second. All right, Supervisor Haggerty.
First of all, I want to be clear that I think both individuals that are involved in this do a great job for this organization. So that's not the issue for me. But can you tell me when the last time they saw any kind of change in compensation, whether it be additional days or a salary increase? How many years ago that was?
Director Haggerty, that would be at least 6 or 7 years ago.
Okay, how many?
6 or 7 years ago for the DAPCOs. As Director Wagenknecht indicated, through the course of any given year, I've brought to you changes to all the different salary classes of different employees, and that's just a matter of a course of doing business. We do a comparison. We look at jobs that are in other agencies, similar and like kind, and we make adjustments. So just to finish the thought, Director Haggerty, the uh, This is one in which it was over about a year and a half ago. I brought it to the personnel committee for a change. And at that time, there was a concern about, you know, we're in times in which they didn't feel comfortable making those kind of recommendations. So instead, we decided to make a recommendation to the full board about, frankly, on the benefits side. And
what you're telling me on the record is the last time that they have seen any salary change, whether it be in monetary or in the form of additional days off, has been 6 or 7 years ago.
That's when this organization has taken those steps, right? So built into the contract are COLAs. And then about 2 of the 3 years in this current contract, Director Haggerty, we've all been basically spending more for our retirement. And the COLA has essentially been offsetting that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so that's...
I mean, I think you're putting more into my answer than...
Sorry.
Into your answer than you need to, because where I'm at with this is I would rather give them the money than the days, because I think the days is just it almost seems kind of a backdoor way of dealing with the issue. And I know that's a flop from what I have said in the past meetings. And the reason why is because Alameda County employees haven't seen a raise in 4.5 years, and or some will be 4.5 years. And that's as far as I'm willing to go with our employees. And what I try to do when I sit on these other agencies is to at least be consistent, because I don't think it's fair to my employees that, you know, I hold them to no raises and then go to these other regional agencies and start voting everybody raises. If you're telling me that they haven't had a raise in 6 or 7 years, I will support this.
All right, so there's a recommendation by both the staff and the personnel committee, and the board asked for some information at the last meeting, which has been provided, which is to compare these salaries with the salaries of the assistants at some other larger regional agencies, which we have in our package. If there's not any further discussion, is a motion a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, item passes. Right. Moving on to item 6, which is the report of the Mobile Source Committee, and our chair for that, Supervisor Haggerty. Raiders and Martinez.
Not a bad idea.
We have the Raiders in Napa.
All right. So. Committee met on Thursday, September 27, 2012, and approved the minutes for June 28, 2012. The committee then received an update on plug-in electric vehicle programs, including air district deployment of electric vehicle infrastructure and overview of recently completed draft regional plug-in electric vehicle plan and its elements. The committee also considered approval of the Transportation for Clean Air Fund, regional fund policies and evaluation criteria for the fiscal year ending 2013, and proposed funding allocations for 2 projects, and recommends that to the Board of Directors. Number 1, approve the proposed fiscal year ending 2013 Transportation Fund for Clean Air regional fund policies and evaluation criteria presented to the committee, Agenda Item 5, Attachment A, as revised by the committee to include pilot shuttle projects as an eligible product category. 2, approve an allocation of up to $4 million in Transportation Fund for Clean Air regional funds for shuttle feeder bus and regional ride-sharing projects. And approve, 3, the allocation of $400,000 for electronic bicycle lockers. The next meeting of the committee is on Thursday, October 25th at 9:30 a.m. I move that the Board of Directors approve the report and recommendations of the Mobile Source Committee.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Items passed, including the recommendation. All right. So we are moving now to item 8, which is an action item. It's the work plan for action items related to the accidental releases from industrial facilities. And to note, I know there was a lot of discussion, and there were requests that came out of our special meeting on the Chevron fire. We didn't quite have as many people at that meeting as we have today, but we had a good turnout. We had a quorum for much of the meeting. And we got a good report on the various items as follow-up to the Chevron fire. And there was some board direction to come back. I've had some subsequent discussions with Jack and staff as well on some of these issues. And so what's coming to us is a work plan, which Jack's going to go through, which we would then, if we approve this with any changes, would be we would get regular reports on this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. So for item 8, I'm going to walk through for you a series of slides that captures the key items that are contained in the work plan under this item. There's, if you take a look at item number 8, you'll see a lot more substantive discussion than certainly that's contained on these PowerPoints. But let me walk through for you what we're committing to as an organization. So just if you all recall, and I know you all know this, but back on August 6th of this year, there was a fire at the Chevron refinery at the crude unit number 4. And as a result of that, of the actions taken by staff and clearly steps that we need to take to be able to, we think, enhance our efforts. So when potentially this occurs in the future, we think that we need to step up and frankly enhance our efforts to serve the public in a more substantive step. So let me specifically walk through for you, Sean, if you can get the next slides. And so what we've done as staff is we took a step back and we've developed a 7-point action plan for your consideration. And Mr. Chairman, as you indicated, we're looking for the board to adopt this plan. And so, Sean, if you could just move to the first one. The first is we're going to continue to investigate the Chevron incident, coordinate with the Contra Costa County and other agencies, including the Chemical Safety Board, the Federal Chemical Safety Board. We are, of course, going to be documenting the violations, and we think that there's still actions to take relative to our own enforcement efforts. For each of these significant steps, I'm going to suggest to you a specific committee, Mr. Chairman, that would be what I would suggest provides the oversight and feedback to the staff. And so for this particular one, we'll come back to the Stationary Source Committee as a result of our own investigation and further enforcement actions that are going to be taken. Sean? As a result of this action and the staff's subsequent steps, we plan to also review and update our Air District incident response procedures. We have in place a set of procedures that call for deploying our enforcement staff, our monitoring efforts, and lab staff, but we think we need to shore up some of our steps and make it a little bit more comprehensive internally. We also think it makes sense to incorporate a coordinated messaging strategy, and also these efforts would be reviewed by the Stationary Source Committee as well. Sean? Let me highlight and spend a little bit of time, though, on an important part of this 7-point action plan, and that involves the evaluation of our air district air monitoring capabilities. What we want to do is evaluate in some potential enhancements to our monitoring capabilities, and by this we think it makes a lot of sense for us to convene a panel of experts, bring them in, get their best thinking, and then indeed make recommendations back to what I'm recommending is the executive committee, Mr. Chairman. I think that's at that level because it's clearly going to involve resources of the agency and also a number of interagency efforts as well. And with that in mind, I wanted to mention very specifically that it makes a lot of sense, we think, to be working in concert with our partner agencies, of course, EPA and Contra Costa County. But I also want to specifically mention we think that the efforts of the California Resources Board can be very useful here. And with that in mind, I wanted to just mention that we have two representatives from CARB here, Gregory Vlasic, who is the chief of the Monitoring and Laboratory Division, and Michael Miguel, if you folks wouldn't mind standing up and get recognized, and they're here to answer any questions you all might have. There's been a lot of dialogue and discussion with CARB already, and we know that this will, we think, make a lot of sense for us to continue these efforts as we move forward. And so I think there's going to be more on this, Mr. Chairman. You have some folks from the audience, I think, that have put in cards to speak on this issue. But this is one in which there's going to be a lot of discussion and dialogue. Yep. And we do expect to be able to convene that first panel by the end of the year. It's really just a matter of logistics at this point, getting the right set of folks to come and then holding a set of meetings and getting their input. Air monitoring is a very complex, very technical field, and we want to be able to call upon experts from across the country. And just the feedback that has been received by a number of folks, I think you're going to hear from Mr. Larson, some recommendations will go a long way, I think, for in terms of recommendations and enhancements we can make to our efforts. Let me go, Sean, the next one. The board might be aware of the fact that we, before this incident, were developing a rule that would track emissions from the refineries. And by this, I mean we had, as part of our regulatory efforts, a rulemaking that would essentially call upon the refineries to pull together all the emissions that are at the particular facility and be tracked over time. We think it makes sense, given this incident, to augment what would have been included in that rule and actually also include air monitoring in and around the facilities. We want to take a look at what this panel comes back with, as well as our own homework, and look to see how we can, frankly, enhance some of the air monitoring in and around the refineries. As I know you all know, that we have communities living right up adjacent to these facilities. And so it makes a lot of sense, we think, to take this rule, have it get expedited, and then also include air monitoring. And so what we want to be able to do through this rulemaking is really require that the facilities put together air monitoring plans, also put together an overall picture and perspective of their emissions, and that way we can identify if there are significant increases going on over time, we can take steps to mitigate those emissions. We think it makes sense to have the Stationary Source Committee also review and provide input to staff on this effort as well. We think that it makes a lot of sense as part of this action plan also to enhance our community outreach efforts. And we think that there's clearly a variety of steps that we can take to provide additional information. And really, we think it makes sense for us to develop a set of protocols. But we also think we're going to probably need to evaluate some additional staffing for the staff itself. Excuse me. And I've identified the Public Outreach Committee here, Mr. Chairman, as part of that effort. There have been some folks from the community have suggested that we think about hiring a community outreach coordinator. Those are my words. I've heard the word ombudsman as well, to be somewhat of a community advocate. Those are all, I think, very good suggestions, and we just want to be able to take, as staff, an opportunity to take a look at those ideas and come back with some recommendations. We have an ombudsman on staff. That title has a lot of history behind it. Yes. We think there might be a better, more accurate title, and we want to take an opportunity to come back with a reason and proposal for the board to consider. So some of the last steps of this action plan, I think it makes a lot of sense also as in district to examine again our legislative authorities that dictate how much we can seek in terms of penalties on any given incident. And so we think for next year we need to have the Air District sponsor some legislation that would increase our authorities to provide that much more disincentive for an event that occurs like this. And so as Mr. Bunger can indicate, the law is very explicit with regard to the factors that have to be taken into account when deciding a penalty for a given incident. And we think it makes a lot of sense to have some legislation that could be introduced that would speak to when this type of incident occurs in the future. You know, God forbid this occurs again and we get, literally thousands of people affected. We think because our own authorities are somewhat constrained as to how much we can impose as a penalty, we would like to seek some legislative solution here to help us in this regard. So, Brian, I'll have you add to my remarks after I'm all done, or if you want to add them now, if you want to.
Yeah. Okay. Why don't you add it now, since you're on that item?
The fundamental problem we run into is that incidents like this tend to happen on one day, in one 24-hour period, and so we're restricted to the per-day penalties that we have, which for strict liability, which is sometimes what happens, is $10,000, or even when you get into intentional conduct, you're in the $40,000 to $100,000 range. And I think not just district staff, but people in general probably view those as inadequate penalties when thousands of people are maybe affected. But there's no multiplier for people affected because it's a public nuisance statute, not private nuisance. And so the thought would be that we do something to adjust the penalty levels for public nuisance violations.
So, Mr. Chairman, I thought it made sense for us to bring that back to the legislative committee. You think it makes sense to have a legislative committee in November, before the session begins, to really kind of seek authors and things like that. I don't think we're going to have a problem with getting an author since we've been approached by a variety of folks who want to do this. So
there are a couple of legislators who are intending to hold a state legislative hearing on this, and this can come up in that context as well.
Very much so, and there's already been some discussion with their staffs along these lines, and they seem very interested in undertaking these efforts. Finally, Sean, if I can just, the last one, we think it makes sense mid-year of our budget cycle, if you all know, we're in our second quarter now of our fiscal year, we think it makes sense to, in order to be able to respond expeditiously for the public, we think we need to be able to evaluate and enhance our resources, and we think it makes sense for us to consider having a fee amendment, a fee proposal for you to consider in the first quarter of next year, a fee proposal that would begin to cover the costs of the enhancements to staff in terms of the instrumentation, any additional staff that might be needed to be able to enhance our program here for incident response. And so I've suggested, Mr. Chairman, that we bring it back to both the executive as well as the budget and finance committees to consider. We think we can put together the necessary elements of a fee proposal and be in front of you something that would be either a one-time or a recurring fee, depending on how we structure it, that something that would begin to start to cover the costs if indeed we need to be able to secure additional instrumentation and or staff. Last set of slides, I've provided for you a timeline for these. The one change I would make is the investigation will likely take longer than what's shown here for you. I suspect it'll go into probably the good part of mid to late next year, I suspect, given everything that we're uncovering with regard to this particular incident. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stop there, and I'll be glad to answer any kind of questions.
And I just wanted, before I call on Mark, just wanted to say I appreciate all the hard work of staff to sort of put this together. I think, and I know Vice Mayor Ross, with four of the five refineries in the barrier being Contra Costa, we hear about these issues a lot. And I think moving toward increased monitoring is really important, both from the standpoint of our ability to capture violations when they occur, and two, to make sure the public is informed from a health standpoint of what's going on from an air quality standpoint in their community. I think we recognized after this incident that there are some gaps, that there's a need to have more monitoring, both on a regular basis, a continuous monitoring, as well as after an incident. And I know, Jack, the incident response in that next to last slide is designed to sort of figure out how we can capture this information after an incident, separate and apart from just the continuous monitoring. And then
that's correct.
I think the idea of the legislation, it seems like it's been a few years since we had an increase, and we've talked about this before. There's been some opposition sometimes, but clearly this is an opportunity that's on the legislators' radar screen. In fact, I know, Tom, your wife is thinking of holding
a
hearing.
She was on this board.
She's thinking of holding a hearing. So I appreciate that. And the last thing I'll say is that with regard to the rule development, I think clearly while that the rule development on the tracking emissions has been in place, that the intention here is to speed this up as much as possible and then combine it with the additional requirements for monitoring at the same time. Right.
That's correct. And so we've actually held, as you know, Mr. Chairman, meetings with the refinery managers.
Right. Yes.
And that was the day literally after the incident, so it was
yes,
August 7th. And we informed them then that we're likely going to be augmenting what we're suggesting here. And indeed, as based on our homework, we can see that there's going to be a need for additional monitoring in and around the facilities, and we want to include that in this rule.
Right. All right. Vice Mayor Ross, followed by Supervisor Haggerty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I echo your comments about updating the strict liability provision in the law. $10,000, that may be what it costs to prosecute the whole violation in and of itself, and it just doesn't have any recovery for those fees either, so we need to update that to a more reasonable and modern standard. The second thing is the message that was given to the public, we gave our message based on what we had at the time. It was different. It was not in conformance with the Contra Costa Health Department's message of shelter in place. I think we need to tighten up. They were giving out a shelter in place, and I think we need to tighten up those protocols when we do talk to the public in these during these incidents. Second thing, and I'm trying to be brief, the second thing would be the plume. When it comes to where the plume is going and we message to which direction, which communities are affected, we should have enough meteorological data, or we should be building it up, that when we know an incident has occurred, we can pretty much guess which way the plume is going, and we should be able to direct that. And if we have more information, as it looks like we're going to have before the stationary committee, to enhance that ability and get that messaging out, I'm certainly in favor of that. And the last thing would be the incentives. I'd like to hear, certainly we're big on penalties, but I'd like to hear what the incentive portion is. If you can get one example of how we would incentivize a refinery to not have these issues.
The incentive, Director Ross, will be not to penalize them. I don't know how else to answer. I don't know if we can necessarily incentivize the best and behavior and the kind of steps that we're looking for. I think what we need to do in our own arsenal, our own toolbox, is to have a really good stick on this regard, and that's what we're trying to tell you, that the state law is, I think, needs to get revisited. And Brian, if I recall, we tried to do this like 3 or 4 years ago. We had Marta Scutia with a bill, right, and it ultimately never got through, ultimately, right, in.
It started off in a different direction, and I think over time we were able to orient it more toward this usefulness, but it never did get out of, I think it made it out of committee, but I can't recall for sure.
And Mark,
to your point, Director Ross, there are a number of things that incent the refineries to do a better job, right, most of right, which are totally outside our control.
Right.
But the one that we do control is inadequate at this point, I think, to address these issues, and so that's why we're focusing right on that aspect.
I think it's important to note, right, Contra Costa County has an industrial safety ordinance that applies, and Richmond has one, to the four refineries in the county. That's the only local ordinance in the country that has a higher level of requirement for process safety. So that's where a lot of these incentives, you know, the requirements are in that ordinance. Solano County doesn't have such an ordinance for their refinery. But I know in talking to the Chemical Safety Board, what they have said is at the end of the investigation, they are going to make recommendations, if they have any, with regard to any changes to the industrial safety ordinance that they think would be beneficial. So that'll happen as well. Mark, anything else?
Okay, no, that's it.
I think, Mr. Chairman, our fine might be amongst the highest amongst all these agencies, by the way. Just given the statutory authority that OSHA has, and the Chemical Safety Board is not a regulatory
right
agency, it's a
right
recommendation.
They're going to make recommendations to us, to the county, to others, to Chevron. Supervisor Haggerty, followed by Mayor Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you know, this isn't, I know you're going to be getting back to us, but first of all, I think it's important to say that I think our community outreach department does a great job. But, and I mean that sincerely, represents us well. So when I look at the community outreach aspect of this plan, is it your thought that department is currently understaffed, or are you maybe looking at having somebody on an on-call type basis, that if something does happen, a catastrophic event, that we would engage immediately a like consultant type firm? I guess I'm trying to figure out what you're thinking, and then I'm trying to and I guess I'm trying to figure out what you're thinking in relationship to the department and its current staff.
Yes, Director Haggerty, I want to echo your remarks because I think our community outreach effort is exemplary. First of all, they are professionals. They are extremely hardworking, and we've learned a lot in this last incident. What we were trying to do is just provide the information as much as possible to the public. But that being said, I think the community members have all indicated to me that if we were to think about having an additional staff member be a community advocate that could be interacting with them a little bit more full time, that might be something for us to consider. And so that's why I included it here. We want to do a little bit more homework on this idea and come back to you with a recommendation. Mm-hmm. Given our shrinking resources in terms of folks, I have had to take some folks out of this group and use them elsewhere in the agency. But we think it makes some sense for us to think about having maybe some type of community advocate.
So did we ever hire the public health officer?
What I did is just trying to recognize the fiscal constraints that we operate under. I took Brian Bateman to serve as the health and science officer. So that's who serves in that capacity right now. So
that would seem to me that a public health officer would be a great advocate for the community. It's public health. I mean, if there's a guy that stands up and says, I'm the public health officer,
right,
it sure sounds a heck of a lot better than, I'm on the board of directors or, I'm a deputy director from it. It just, the community seems to relax a little when they hear that it's a public health officer that's speaking.
Scott, for example, in Contra Costa, the model there, and every model could be is different, is there is somebody lodged within the health department, within the hazardous materials division of the health department. In that case, he's called an ombudsperson. It can be called anything else, who actually is involved with the community. It's Michael Kent, right? Some of you know Michael. Being on the ground on an incident like this, there were over 15,000 people that went to area hospitals. 15,000. So even though this air district does a great job on outreach, that for issues like this around the Bay Area, having the additional sort of outreach, whatever you call it, makes a lot of, I think, helps people navigate what's a complicated system and understanding whether it's violation that occurs at a metal melting facility or whatever. Having individuals like this, I think, is helpful. The models worked with Michael and Contra Costa, but it's different.
I mean, with all respect, I am a county supervisor such as you.
Right.
And if we show up in an incident, not us, but if the county shows up in an incident and says, I'm from the county, I'm here to help.
Right.
It doesn't always go over well.
Well, that's why
what I'm saying is to have the public health officer within the air district, I think that carries a different weight. I'm from the air district and I'm your public health officer and I'm on the ground. So I think it carries a little different weight than some guy that says, I'm with the county, I'm here to help.
Well, the model in Contra Costa is someone within the health department. And I think the recommendation here is to have this be discussed further at the committee as to what makes sense and how to do it properly. I'm just mentioning the model that happens to be in Contra Costa, someone from the health department in hazardous materials who's actually well-respected. The model here could be something similar, whatever we call it, whatever the position, that's for further discussion at the committee. Mayor Bates, followed by...
So I just want to get a clarification. That means that Brian Bateman is a health officer? Is that right, Brian?
He's my
what medical school did you go to?
Cal.
Actually, he's a MPH from Harvard, anyway, actually, if you wish to know.
So I think we need somebody who might actually have some credentials in that area. But
Director Bates, actually, that's
pardon me?
I want to go on record as defending Brian because he's an MPH from Harvard.
I think Brian's a brilliant guy, but I don't think he's a health officer.
Brian has this position, but
he has a position.
Other position.
I understand what the board is looking for us to do. So
I just wonder when he stands up and says, I'm a health officer. I'm wondering about the fact that Chevron did this bypass. Could you explain to me what the maximum fines and efforts under that, because that to me is the most egregious thing that I've heard. So, Brian, maybe you could.
I think it's.
It may be out of our jurisdiction, but I'm interested in knowing what's
going
on.
Well, we did issue a fine. That was one of the what brought Tom this issue of asking for this this better notification. We did issue a violation. It wasn't particularly discussed at the board, and that's why this new policy that we approved today will give us more notice when things like that happen.
I understand that. My question is, I want to know what current law, what we can do, and what we can might expect, the range of expectation around that. Brian, do you have the?
Every penalty can range from $0 to $1 million, depending on what type of conduct was involved.
Uh-huh.
And so,
Million is the upside.
A million
is the upside.
If you have intentional conduct and somebody dies,
okay.
From the incident, so most of our cases fall under strict liability because we don't have evidence of other conduct. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we get into negligence. Very, very rarely do you find intentional conduct. And then the enhanced penalties only are there when there's great bodily injury or something like okay. that coupled with bad conduct. So okay. typically we're in the lower end of those numbers, $10,000, $25,000, that kind of penalty.
So. You know, Chevron just recently formed a $2.5 million IE, independent expenditure, to go after Fran Pavley. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's their reaction about how they, the author of AB 32, that's the way they conduct business.
Director Gardner?
Oh, thank you, Vice Chair Cholera. Okay, I just want to start out by saying that I really like the program, and I am impressed with how quickly the staff is developing and responding to a gap in what we perceive as, you know, the procedures and needs that, you know, we have as an agency. So I think we're definitely on the right path. The one thing I'm wondering about accidental release is just that term. It seems like that would be on a scale of a very small release, and we currently have probably notice of violations that we do to respond to that. So we might want to put some definition around what the magnitude would be that would trigger this kind of a program. I see that you're... That you're looking at something more catastrophic than what might be perceived as something small, but I think that it merits fleshing that out. And then on the air quality monitoring, we heard so many comments about the need for air quality monitoring around Lehigh, and we were trying to wrap our arms around that. It seems like as we're convening the panel of experts that we might be looking towards having them look at air monitoring programs in general. The air quality monitoring and the community outreach programs I see as a big need around Lehigh and, you know, and probably any large facility where the community perceives that they have exposure, and we just can't really answer the questions in terms of is there exposure, isn't there exposure, and are we adequately monitoring? Then the last thing I was wondering about on the legislation, and we're hearing a lot of comments about that, do we believe that there were proactive measures to avoid the Chevron situation? I mean, my impression, I was at the meeting where, you know, we just looked at the Chevron situation, and it from what I could tell, it was an accident. Mm-hmm. And my knowledge of oil companies, I know that oil companies do not like accidents, that they, in general, have very rigorous safety programs and do everything that they can to try and avoid it, because they don't want the exposure either for their employees or the public. I'm not here to defend Chevron, but I've worked with oil companies before, and I know that they hold their company's feet to the fire around, you know, around their safety factors. So I'm just wondering if you can speak to that.
Director Gardner, I think Chevron, if they were here, would tell you that this is something that
they are here.
Oh, they
well,
are here.
They I don't mean to put words in their mouth. I'm not going to put words in their mouth, but I think that they would tell you that they wouldn't this is not something that ever planned for or something that they personally would also want to have happen to them. And so there is a very rigorous, as you know, very rigorous safety programs in place and inspections. You know, the investigation is still ongoing, though, as to what exactly happened, and probably will not be available for all of us to review until the December-January timeframe. That's when the metallurgical report from the Chemical Safety Board is going to come back,
right.
And I think that's going to be very telling
when
that actually gets in a draft form for us to consider. And so I'll be bringing that back to the Stationary Source Committee for its understanding when we hear all that.
Okay. Well, and I'm not saying that additional fines might not be appropriate, because certainly, even if it is an accident and was unavoidable, there is an effect to the public, and it does take more staff time to respond to these issues. So if we believe it was avoidable, and then absolutely, you know, that it should be punitive. If it's more that it was an accident, and I mean, I just don't know if the language needs to be fleshed out in a different way.
Well, the legislation committee is going to go through the discussion of what to put in the bill, right? That's my understanding. The bottom line is just seeking greater authority, because it's what staff's belief, and I think many of us believe that it's sort of a one size fits all. It doesn't really, as you say, Brian, when you have an incident going on for one day, it limits your ability, and there's a difference between types of events that may occur in one day. Some will have clearly more impact than others. And
yeah, that's right. And the public nuisance events are the ones where the releases tend to happen outside the facility. But, you know, the state law and the federal environmental laws are structured with a strict liability component, which means no fault. I mean, it's not...
Right.
It's not anybody's fault, but if it happens, it's a violation of the air quality laws, and there's a penalty that applies to that.
Right.
And they're just, we believe, for public nuisance at this point, too low.
Councilmember Hudson, followed by Supervisor Rice.
Yeah, I'd like to go back to the first thing. Our ombudsman, I can't even say that, Michael Kent, also is active either at the Citizen Advisory Committee, or he does report on air district matters to the hazardous material group that you foolishly put me on at one time. I would ask at this time if you would take number 5 and number 7 and kind of push that out until we meet next month for the resources and legislation. When you look at the timelines,
what do you mean by push it out?
Discuss it as much now until we've had the opportunity in 3 or 4 weeks, whatever it is, to take a look at under the ledge and the resources under budget and finance, and kind of come back and then get more into the dialogue, because this could run a while if we.
I think what we're seeking today is just get the board's authority to move forward on all of these.
I concur. The one that has me more concerned that I wish we would do some discussing is the rule development. So if I could push you to number 4, when I first read this, the first line, staff has previously developed a regulatory concept paper.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how long ago that was. I don't remember seeing it, but it's not as if I don't have enough trees stacked up in my...
It was presented here at the board.
Okay, yeah, but, I mean, did all of us or some of... I'd like to see that again, if I could, before
can,
the ledge.
We can send that to you.
Yeah.
Because this thing of going out to 2014
that's
for rules...
That's Stationary Source.
That's the long one on the timeline. The next, go down to the paragraph about 60% down. Any significant increase in emissions would trigger a requirement for mitigation. I'm leaving out the parenthetical as determined based on impact analysis, because when I first read that, I was trying to get my hands around what you were actually. There's going to be an analysis, there's going to be some impacts, and there's going to be a report is what I read. Also, many aspects of the proposed rule would be patterned after the district's highly successful rule of 2005. I probably have that also, but
the flare monitoring rule.
Before legislation.
This will be Stationary Source. The rule development is Stationary Source, but not legislation.
I know, but I would also, if I can, because I don't know if I've ever read it. I mean, it might be in the clean air, or it could be in something that's 1,500 pages long. If I could get those two things before ledge meets, because I think when we start going after incentives, there's a lot of possibilities.
Right.
Also, would like to see more of the broader aspect of going after some legislation at Sacramento level of possibly seeing what is going to be for down south. I mean, I don't want to be just five people out there trying to get something in the Bay Area to find out we didn't go after the votes in Southern California and we're just spinning our wheels.
Right. But I think it's important to note that the legislation issue is going to go to legislative. Rule development goes to stationary source. That's the typical. But it sounds like, Brian, everybody ought to get a copy of the concept paper that was already presented.
Yes, we can send the copy of the concept paper, and if you'd like the flare management rule, we can send that to you as well. And Mr. Chairman, in my discussions with the South Coast representatives, they seem that they'd be interested in a in this legislative proposal as well, by the way, as long as it's narrowly focused down to those incidences that we've discussed here today.
Great. Supervisor Rice.
Yes, thank you. I wanted to echo a couple of the comments that were made with regards to the air quality monitoring. It stood out to me both during the when we were discussing the Lehigh item and then even and during the Chevron presentation we had on the incident, how the adequacy of what of the instrumentation we have out there and locations, how there was questions. Do we have what we need in the right places? It sounded like cost was a barrier, and in my mind, cost should never be cost should not be a barrier, and there should be a way for industry, whether it's Lehigh or the oil refineries, to pay for the appropriate equipment, state of the art, whatever it is that we need. We should have not only continuous data collection, continuous monitoring, but also we should be you know on the cutting edge when we and Director Carr. Carl Ruz spoke to that as well at one of our previous meetings. So I just wanted to get that on the record. Don't think cost should be a barrier to doing what's right. And I also think that continuous monitoring will also provide data that may have value going down the road that we can't even predict right now.
Great.
That's it. Thanks.
Supervisor Hagerty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jack, and again, I'm qualifying a lot of my statements today. This has absolutely nothing to do with Brian. Brian, you're a great employee. You're doing a great job. I am a little concerned about something that's come out today and the fact that we have deviated from the budget that was approved and not hiring the public health officer. When I first heard that, I was very excited about that. And the reason why is I felt that there could be a robust discussion amongst a public health officer from the Air District leading the discussion, working with other public health officers in the various counties. And not that Brian is not capable of doing that. I mean, he's more capable of doing it than myself. So, again, this is not an indictment. But I would like to have more of a discussion on that issue. And if nobody else cares, it seems maybe we've even lost a quorum. If nobody else cares, then that's fine. You know, we can drop it and just go with it. But again, I personally, as one member of this board, is a little disappointed in the direction we went, and I would like to see a discussion about that.
Okay. Super.
And I'd like to know if anybody else cares, because if nobody else cares, then drop it.
Director Hagerty, actually,
is that a rhetorical question?
No, it's actually a question that I'm asking my colleagues, because if they truly don't care, and it's just me, then I don't think we should waste a lot of staff time.
Director Hagerty, I've heard the comment, and there's a lot to this story, so I'd like the opportunity to bring it to the appropriate committee and let you know what we have done, what went into that decision. And I hear the thinking on your part and other board members about maybe tapping into the health community more on having somebody here like that. And as I indicated, we have a story here because we did try to do that on I can walk through for you in a committee meeting what we did and why we are here.
I actually believe a public health officer here would also keep some of our regional partners who tend to skew Air District information, in my opinion, from time to time. It would keep them honest. And I think if somebody said, look, I'm the public health officer from the Air District, and that is not true what you're saying about that corridor or that region of the county, of you know, this certain county, this is really what's going on there.
Supervisor Groom.
Thank you. I would like to echo the comments on monitoring and enhanced monitoring and looking at new and innovative ways to pay for it. But I'd like to make a comment on the health director. We went over this for a long time in both the budget committee and the personnel committee.
And I think what Mr. Broadbent was ultimately trying to do was not exceed certain budget that we all imposed as we were worried about the financial health of this organization. So I think that's what the step he took. But when he assured me that it was only temporary and that when we looked at the, this is 12 and 13, 13 and 14 budget, we would go back and try to again carve out additional money for a public health officer. Because I think that what we, not just at Lehigh, and not just at Chevron, but during the CEQA process when we were being bombarded by lots and lots of technical things, it would have been very helpful, in my opinion, to have a public health officer.
Okay.
But wasn't the public health officer in the budget?
No. There was one a few years ago.
We should have hired him then.
And we went through a process. It was very lengthy. It's not a pretty process we went through. Ultimately ran into issues. And so the approach that we now have, I think, will work. But what I want to do is have an opportunity to talk with the board about right. that through a committee.
And we are going to have more discussion at the committee about this other proposed position. Right.
Right.
Okay. Anyone else wish to speak? I have one speaker card. We can always finish up the discussion. I have a speaker card from Denny Larson from Global Community Monitor. And if anyone else wishes to speak, just please fill out a card.
Thank you, Chairman Gioia, members of the board, and I too would like to echo a thank you to the staff for their rapid action plan that they put together here. Had a chance to meet with Jack and Eric, and as well as Supervisor Gioia to go through that, and I think it's an excellent plan, and the fact that it's being delivered in such a timely fashion is really going to help with community outreach and rebuilding trust, I think, in the district. Since I left CBE about 10 years ago, I have been founded an organization that has traveled and partnered with 100 organizations in 27 countries to develop best practices and models. We've also shared many of those models of the Air District Regulation. Right now in Thailand, there's a FLAIR rule development policy that's moving forward based on the work that you did. Most recently was invited to help construct and participate in EPA's Region 2 Citizen Science Summit in New York City and New Jersey, in which they're bringing the public involvement into the monitoring to a whole new level and talking about that. We've also been part of a four-year partnership with the state of Delaware's Air Quality Division, and this collaboration has led to the training of citizens to do monitoring in the hot spots. And we heard a little bit about the wood smoke earlier. The reason that the district needs to expand its monitoring, both mobile and stationary, is that, you know, it, by design and by regulation, it's an ambient system. It's meant to tell us what is everybody breathing in this one, you know, particular zone. What we really need now is the focus on the hotspot monitoring. What is the benzene level across the street from Chevron? It's different from the station that's about a mile away. That's pretty obvious. But without that kind of monitoring and the kind of things that the district is proposing doing now, we just don't know, and the public does have a right to know, particularly if they're living in a vulnerable area. And we need to expand the district's capability to do mobile monitoring, incident monitoring, to be able to get out there when people can obviously see that there's a huge toxic mess and be able to tell them, you know, what's in there. We have been talking to hundreds of East Bay residents as part of our program that we launched to actually wipe up the fallout and the soot that fell on people's gardens, on their homes, their children's toys, and we've shared that information with the district staff. We need to be able to do a better job of that, and clearly an aspect of this is involving the citizens in the monitoring. They're already breathing the air, they're feeling health effects through efforts like Hamilton County, Ohio, which we brought the model to the agency. This agency, citizens can be trained and participate actually in the monitoring. The collaborative project in Delaware that I mentioned has led to 4 years of collaboration and a $35 million investment in the large steel facility to clean up, a cooperative agreement between the state, the citizens, and the company. It's also increased the quality of the civic engagement that happens. So it's more than just sort of outreach to the community. It's how the community and the agency engage each other, and that level of engagement and the quality of it has increased dramatically. Also, if I could just continue real quickly, in that area, when we're talking about fines and legislations, the state has a program under which a portion of the penalty money can be applied for by the impacted community to do projects. That's where the funding for this 4 years worth of monitoring in the state of Delaware, in Joe Biden's hometown, Claymont, has occurred. And the citizens have run that program themselves. They also have an advocate within the state agency, a problem solver, who serves as a guide for communities through navigating the system, which I can tell you from working with communities around the Air District, people really don't understand how to navigate the system here. And you have a good system, a system that can be improved by involving the citizens and expanding what you're doing with monitoring. So
thank you.
I'm here to support that 100%.
Great. Thank you very much. Thanks, Danny. Actually, one of the points about, I know this has come up in the past, about when there's a violation, how the money gets used, because right now it goes into the general fund, and it's up to the board as to whether it's focused in impacted communities. And that could apply whether it was the Lennar project at Hunters Point, for example, or Chevron, or wherever else around the Bay Area. It seems that that would be a subject of discussion, of looking at some focused use of penalty dollars in impacted communities. That's, I think, an important issue.
Right, and Mr. Chairman, last year, I think, well, we had a program like that. We pulled it out of this year's budget in large part because of the fiscal concerns of the district. But that is something I think we could think about creating again, using the penalty monies, you know, in a community. The board did direct the staff to use the Lennar money, for example, in San Francisco.
Right.
I mean, so it's not unprecedented.
Right. So to the extent there are any penalties coming out of this incident in August, we could look at that in a similar way.
Yes.
Right. Good. All right. That's the last speaker card. Does anybody else wish to speak? Sort of being informal on time, since we don't have a lot of speakers and important issue. Anyone else wish? Sure. A motion to approve the action item. Motion by Mayor Bates and second by Supervisor Nis. All in favor?
Yes.
Aye. Any opposed? Great. Jack, thank you for the staff for all the hard work, and I know there'll be a lot of follow-up by different committees, and we will be working with all the stakeholders on this. Great. Okay. Pulling back here. We have, actually, before we go into closed session, why don't we just finish up the open session item under report of executive officer. That way we don't have to come out and meet again. So report of executive officer. Jack?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. A couple things. We're wrapping up the ozone season. The summer ozone season essentially is getting over as we speak. Even though the next couple of days might be hot, we don't expect an exceedance. So we've had only this is one of our cleaner years we've only had four exceedances of the National Ambient Air Quality Standard for ozone, an 8-hour standard, and as you can see here, 3 and 8. So I just wanted to mention that to all of you. One thing I also just real quickly wanted to mention to all the board is, you might have read some press about this, is that the governor signed a bill that the district board sponsored. And this was SB 1339, and Leland Yee was the author of that bill. And what it does is it authorizes the district and MTC to jointly develop and implement a region-wide commuter benefits ordinance. And it essentially would allow for employers to offer their employees options to pay for employee transit, vanpool subsidies, things like that. And it's a way, in our minds, to be able to help implement the SCS, the Sustainable Community Strategy. So I did want to mention to all of you, you might have seen some press about this. This law builds on the success of San Francisco. I think Berkeley does this as well, and Richmond. And so it's going to be something that we need to put together with MTC, so you'll be hearing about this more. And but it did he did sign the legislation authorizing this this district to move with MTC on this. And I think that's an important important accomplishment for this year. just logistically, Mr. Chairman, a couple things I wanted to mention. Your next board meeting in November, which is going to be November 7th, you have a set of regulations that are...
The day after the election, huh?
Yeah.
We're going to be able to show up Wednesday morning.
Well, we have...
We're going to have a quorum?
We'll have some hangover medicine in the back. No, the so we have we do have an important permitting regulation for you to consider. We are proposing, Mr. Chairman, that you cancel the 21st because it's the day before Thanksgiving. And Mobile Source Committee would land on Thanksgiving in November, so we're proposing to cancel that as well. The board meeting in December, we are wanting to conduct a tour of some metal, a metal melting facility, and because this is a regulation that we've been working on for you to consider, and it's important, I think, for the board to probably conduct its last facility tour, Mr. Chairman, of this year, at one of the facilities where we'll be proposing a regulation to deal with odors and VOC emissions, PM emissions from these facilities. And so I just wanted to highlight that for you because that will be similar to like the Lehigh tour that we conducted. We are going to make those arrangements for you. You know, Director Bates, we're looking at PSC to hopefully conduct that tour, so I might need your help to kind of convince the plant manager to make that happen. So with that, that's my report, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Point of order.
Yes.
December 26th, Budget and Finance?
No. Is it? So everybody's fine with cancellation of the meeting the day before Thanksgiving, and hopefully you'll call around the quorum, make sure we have enough folks for November 7th.
Yeah. Yes, and we have done so. I think we do.
I have one question. With the rising prices of gasoline in California, the governor, of course, allowed the winter blends to get used before the end of the month in order to try to address the issue. Has there been any concern about impacts on air quality as a result of that, instead of using the summer blend?
Mary Nichols and James Goldstein, the executive director for CARB, contacted me over the weekend to let me know that they're going to authorize the refineries to do this. And we thought that given the meteorological conditions that we're looking at for the rest of the month, we thought it made sense. We didn't think it was going to impact us. So similar discussions went on with South Coast and San Joaquin as well.
And South Coast, I presume.
And South Coast. So those discussions went on, we didn't necessarily see that there was going to be an impact here.
Okay. Thank you.
So
Mayor Bates.
Jack, I'm happy that you want to look at Pacific Steel, but unfortunately, during the month of December, I'm going to be actually gone from the 5th to the 22nd, so I'll be in a foreign country.
We'll have to do the tour without you.
I was going to say, you've been there so often.
We'll do the tour. Yeah. Without Tom? Yeah. We'll do without you, Tom.
You want me there because I know all the ins and outs. Yeah. I'm actually going to be in Cuba.
With Lonnie?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
We made effect.
Is this a state Senate trip or?
No.
No. All right. That was a joke.
So that concludes my report, Mr. Chairman.
All right. On Chairperson's report, Jack really announced Public Outreach Committee meeting of October 18th has been rescheduled to Wednesday, October 31st, Halloween. There's an Executive Committee meeting on October 22nd, Mobile Source Committee meeting on October 25th, and Budget and Finance on October 24th. So time and place of our next meeting is November 7th. With that, we will adjourn to closed session. We don't expect to report any items out of closed session.
You want to take board comments?
Oh, yes, board comments. All right, Tom, and then why don't we go around this way?
Okay, I'm just wondering, Jack, I see where we have the TV. Are we actually broadcasting anywhere?
Yes.
Where are we? Are we on a channel?
It's webcast.
It's not broadcast like streaming on any of the cable channels.
No, you can go to our website.
Do we explore that possibility? Is that on
the web.
For instance, all of the local jurisdictions, I mean not all of them, have their own TV capacity, and they do air their own, you know, like their city council meetings and planning commission meetings and others. Seems like that's an option that's available to us that we ought to consider. In other words, even if it's not live, if we set a feed, because they're looking for stuff to show.
And our meetings are just so interesting most of the time.
They are with Haggerty here. When Haggerty shows up, our ratings go up.
Scott, you have to keep coming.
Well, if I can, Director Bates, that'd be something I would want to suggest we do for the new building. Right. You know, it, because that's the time where you can build in everything when we move in.
Well, I just think maybe you know our health officer, excuse me, our PR officer could check it out.
Okay. Let's go around. Mark, I think we're going around this way on comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a heads up on some contractors in the Bay Area are using non-conforming water heaters. They're going to Sacramento.
I think I already asked Jack this question. He's looking into this. I asked the same question.
Oh, did you?
Before the meeting.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, you got
plumbers contacted you too, right?
Actually, no, it was a contract.
Right.
No, it was actually
right.
a contractor.
Right. Do you have a report for us on that, or do you want to just tell us separately?
Well,
we don't want
to. I need to talk to my counsel, but typically for this rule, we go after the manufacturer. Because they're not allowed to sell non-compliant water heaters in the Bay Area, and so we have. Yeah. So, if you want to identify the contract, I'm kidding. So we want to look out. So that's my initial reaction to you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. But I want to talk to Brian a little bit further because we typically enforce this rule by pulling heaters out of hardware stores and that kind of thing, making sure that they are compliant right. with the NOx.
With the water heater, please.
As a property manager, I put right. in about 5 to 6 water heaters a month.
Right.
And they're getting
right.
so expensive. Wow. I was asked why this one contractor was undercutting.
Because they were putting in the wrong
But they're going, yeah, they're going,
heaters.
Going up to the Central Valley buying the heaters and coming in and charging homeowners
so
a lot
is
less.
That, so that's an interesting question. If they can't sell these water heaters in the Bay Area, or the rules, they can't install those water heaters in the Bay Area?
It's both.
So
it
they both. Can't go to Central Valley, buy the water heaters, and install them in the Bay Area?
That rule also exists in the Central Valley, so they've had to have gone outside of the state.
The contract, you know, it's not his forte. He's a plumber. Just, you know, was saying that's why that bid is lower.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
The rule, I think, right now is aligned across all of the districts, right?
It's
actually keyed off of some work that the South Coast District did a number of years ago. So to get a non-compliant heater, I think you actually have to go out of state.
Okay. So. Let's go through comments going through here. Who's Carol?
I would like to just thank Mr. McKay. He came down to San Mateo County and spoke to our community leadership class during our environmental day, and we reviewed it this morning, and you got rave reviews.
Great. He did a good job at that community meeting in Richmond as well. Yeah. Any other comments by board members? Yes.
We received a letter from the EIR for Roddy Ranch. If there's any follow-up on that, I'd like to receive it also. It's not in my district, but if I have to report back to the conference, and have been kind of following it for the last 12, 15 years anyway.
Any other comments? All right, this meeting is adjourned into closed session. Okay.